We are back on College Golf Talk. Burko and Brentley with you, laying this down on a Thursday morning, fresh off a Walker Cup experience at Cypress that anyone involved in any capacity won't soon forget. College golf off and running. A lot of big events we'll get to over the next 20 or 30 minutes or so. Brentley is also going to catch up with Chloe Kovaleski, sort of getting the weeds with one of the new up-and-coming rising stars on the women's side. But let's first and foremost go right to Cyprus, the Walker Cup. Whew, what a week, what an experience. The fog on Sunday, the theater. We kind of knew what would probably happen in Sunday singles. I think we were hoping, because it was a one-point lead for the Americans. You're like, all right, let's see it. And a lot of red early, and unfortunately, that red. I say unfortunately because we're broadcasters and selfish. I don't root. I root for the best story. I root for the best broadcast, and a close one coming down the stretch. Think about those two matches in the fog. If those determined the outcome, it might have been a whole lot different. We still might be waiting on that tee for someone to hit a golf shot.
Yeah. No. I'm with you. Selfishly, we needed it to be close, and the U.S. did what they always do in singles. I think they've now won every Sunday single session since 2009 when we moved it from 8 to 10 singles, and definitely anticlimactic. 8-1-1 is something you never want to see if you're a broadcaster or a fan who's there. But I'll tell you what, Burko, even with the final result, I still walked away from that thinking that that was probably the greatest viewing experience over the course of 2 days, and even you could count the practice days as well, that I've ever experienced. I mean, we've been to USAMs and NCAA championships and US Opens and Open championships, Ryder Cups. This was, when you take into account the venue in Cypress Point and the incredible drone shots and, you know, television angles and just the whole scale of the property and what Alistair McKenzie designed about 100 years ago, and for it to just really pop out. And it was just a beautiful setting. I've always thought the Walker Cup is the purest form of competition. I know these guys aren't technically really amateurs anymore. I know they're getting paid millions of dollars, but when you compare it to, and I wrote about this, when you compare it to the Ryder Cup and the fact that people are going to pay $700,000 for tickets and not get to see many shots up close, let alone walk in the fairways. And then if you don't go, they're peddling, you know, $100 napkin and drink stirrer packages. It's just a complete juxtaposition from what we experienced those 2 days. My only gripe is I wish it was longer. I'm fine with the format, the number of points, but would love to see it stretched out over 3 days.
That's kind of been part of the rumblings that I've heard, because you think about Saturday, 8 a.m., Sunday, in less than 36 hours, it's over.
Yeah.
The actual competition. There are discussions, to my understanding, of four ball format as well. Ooh. Maybe you would just telling you, I'm not saying it's going to happen, right? We discuss what we are attuned to. I would have liked to seen it because I wanted someone to stand on the 18T at Cypress and try to drive it. And I guarantee you, if there was a four ball session, somebody was going to do it. First, their partner would hit a 7-iron or 5-iron in the fairway, whatever they want. And then when someone's going to go full throttle, I think we would have seen a couple of maybe more aggressive shots. But bigger picture, I think the, call it the privacy of Cypress, the lack of TV coverage raised it to a level. You mentioned the drone. To all our crew, men and women working all day long. Awesome. We love it. Yeah, it checked every box. It checked every single box. I get why it's the second ranked course in the country, or third ranked, depending where you want to look. Really good, really enjoyable. happy for Nathan Smith. Was thrilled to see his mom and dad there. I think I came up with that I was at three of his four Mid-Am wins back in the day, and dad was always on the bag, and I saw him on 15 when we were waiting for the secret, not so secret, President Bush was going to show up, and I see Mr. Smith walking down the hill, and I said, there he is. How you doing? He's like, a lot better. He gave me a big bear hug. That's why we love what we do, the relationships, to see it. And Nathan shared with me in July, I'm glad I'm getting the opportunity. He's too humble to say, we knew he was getting it. But he said, I'm glad I'm getting it now for my mom and dad to be able to see it.
Yeah.
You know, those are the things that I love. And we could go on and on. But I know you're intrigued by the MVP for both teams. So many did so much for the Americans, but I said it on the air. In the last month, but especially those 2 days, Mason Howell, he can't get to college quick enough for me because they all stepped up. But did anyone step up bigger on those final few holes than Mason Howell? No, in my opinion.
Yeah, and he had big putts on 15 and 16 in the, I believe it was the singles day on Saturday.
He obviously went 2-2. He went 2-2 on that.
15, 16.
He birdied 15 again. He holes out on 17 for two.
In the Albatross in practice.
Yeah, he was the best putter of the 20 players there, and I don't even think it was a close second. Because we didn't see a lot of long putts hold. I can think of four right off the top on those two holes. He stepped up. So
yeah,
you can go any direction. He's the clear one for me.
I can definitely subscribe to that. And you know, we both had talked about it. We hadn't even really heard of the kid earlier this year. I remember in May, getting ready for my daughter's birthday party, and was connected with his high school coach, Jimmy. And you know, normally, you know, our bandwidth covering all different levels of golf from college to amateur to pro to even junior, there's not a lot of bandwidth for high school state championships, but they're like, look, this kid hit a shot off a bridge, made a birdie on the last hole, got into a playoff with Jackson Bird, who's a great junior going to Clemson. I'm already there this fall. You gotta check out this kid. So I talked to his coach and I just didn't get around to writing it. And I'm like, well, I'm going to save this for a rainy day. Well, little did I know that rainy day would be U.S. Open qualifying, playing in the U.S. Open, medalist at the U.S. Junior, winning the U.S. Amateur, and now being a star at the Walker Cup at just 18 years old. Really, really impressive kid. Like, the entire package, from the personality to the professionalism, still has that little bit of innocence in him as a kid at just 18, and a really great game. But my MVP, since you're taking Mason, is going to be the old buck, Stuart Hegestad, 34 years old, now 7-1 in Walker Cup singles matches. That is an incredible stat. He's tied with William Campbell for second all time. And it's just interesting, just when you think that maybe the time has run out on Stu playing in these Walker Cups, Evan Beck put up a heck of a fight trying to qualify for this team. You know, the old man does it, top 10 at the Northeast, sweet 16 at the Western, and does just enough to get on this team. And when you project ahead, he might play a sixth Walker Cup. He has a chance to go 6-0 next year at La Hinch. For him to get another clinching point, remember back in 2017 at LACC, he did much of the same before we really even knew who he was. He had won at one U.S. Mid-Am at that point. And this week he can tie Nathan Smith for four, most all time. And I was talking with him, Stu, the night that they won. We're walking back to the clubhouse, still misting, and talking about Jay Sigel a little bit. And obviously he is the gold standard when it comes to Walker Cups, played in nine of them, obviously passed away earlier this year. And Stu said, look, like, there will never, I'm not trying to be Jay Sigel. There will never be another Jay Sigel. And I asked him, do guys like that or Nathan Smith, do they inspire you to play in these? And he goes, look, you know, I just love to compete. And he goes, aside from my personal life and my work life, I know exactly what I love to do, and that's compete and play golf. And I think as long as he's able, we're going to see him play in more of those.
Yeah, he's one of, because Nathan's not that old, but Stuart Hagestad's the modern day Nathan Smith. It's just happening, you know, 10 to 15 years later. You know, you can pick the year 2030, 2032. Like, he will be a Walker Cup captain. You know, like, it, to me, this is just a decade behind Nathan. There's something about that week, though. You know, you get fired up, I get fired. Yeah, it is. It happens too quickly. You know, you reference, is it the best viewing experience ever? Hard-pressed to find many better. Obviously, anytime you go to Augusta National, it's special. I think it was
that's in its own category.
Correct. But I think it was the mystique of, you just don't see Cypress Point. And now you got to see it in all its glory. The weather was fantastic. And then just that fog and marine layer to say, you know what? It's beautiful. And then in terms of making it more competitive, you know, I think we kind of touched on it. A third day I know is being discussed, whether it happens or not, we'll see. And you refer to the fact, well, the points would remain the same. I don't think you can go to more points. I always remember a conversation I had with Nick Price when he was the President's Cup captain. I think we were talking when it was in South Korea. You know, little by little, those points have changed. And he's like, the better team wants more points, because over the long run, the better teams will win more points more often than not. So, as you said, if it goes 3 days, is there a way, yes, to keep it at 26? I don't see how you couldn't add more, or then that third day. I don't want to see four singles matches or five. I want to see the eight. I want to see the 10. I'm not privy to those discussions, but if you're going to bring a third day in, you're going to have to add matches and points, in my estimation.
So here, I've been thinking about this a lot, and I think if you add four ball, you know, traditionally that's been a format that Americans have been better at Ryder Cups. And so I don't know if that necessarily makes this more competitive. I think it makes it less. What I was thinking of in terms of keeping it the same and just extending it to 3 days is either you have the opening ceremony, the flag raising ceremony on Thursday evening, or you could do it Friday morning. Guys could go get changed, have lunch. They could come out in the afternoon. They can play that first foursome session, so your four foursomes matches. On Saturday, you do a double session. You do the eight singles and the four foursomes. And then on Sunday, you only have the 10 singles matches. So it's the exact same. It's just, it's paced out a little bit more because these guys were absolutely exhausted. Like, Niall Shields-Donegan had to, the next day, drove up to San Francisco, threw out the first pitch at the Giants game, and then he didn't want to be bothered for 3 days after that. And I don't blame him. Absolutely, just tank it empty. Tyler Weaver was on my flight back and just looked like a zombie. I mean, these guys just, they so many practice days, and then boom, 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 and then it's over. So,
and oh, by the way, like college is in play. People have school they gotta go to back catch up and, on. Correct.
Yeah, or if you're Jacob Modleski, you just head on over to American Dunes.
But he finished top 10, I think. How about that? LaHinch can't get here quick enough. Can't wait. That will be our Walker Cup discussion because there's a lot to get into with college golf. For the men, the Sahali Players Championship, Arizona State beating Texas by a shot without Tommy Morrison, Michael Miaseth, the closing birdie for the Sun Devils, UCLA third, Florida 10th. You know, we'll start with that. It was funny. I was looking at the Arizona State lineup. Familiar names, but I feel like there are more names. I'm like, oh, yeah, wow, they're already done. Yeah. I think there's more unknown than in recent years with the Sun Devils, but maybe that's good because they haven't got to the finish line winning a national championship. I think Texas validated your number one spot you gave them to have a chance to win without Tommy Morrison. What Armin Kirikosian is doing at UCLA, we've seen this building. And you lose your two best players, and it's a really nice start for Morales and Arreño off to the pro ranks. Florida 10th, don't love it. The talent's there. I don't overreact either way. But then in fourth, you've got the U.S. National Junior Development Team. Interesting. Beating the likes of Florida, Arizona, Pepperdine, North Carolina. I like it. I don't want to see him every week. I think that adds to what Chris Zambry and the USGA is trying to accomplish with these national programs that the Americans have been embarrassingly behind for decades to so many other different countries. So if I'm a coach that lost to the kids, that's all the motivation you needed. And it probably is a very nice barometer to what they're getting done in Pinehurst.
Yeah, I'm kind of split on this. It's a cool opportunity, obviously, for these kids. But I know at least a few coaches who, you know, weren't very pleased with this. Just because you're basically playing with nothing to lose. And the college teams that lose to these guys, a little embarrassing, right? Maybe not so much when you think about the level of talent on that national team with Tyler Watts and Luke Colton and those guys, but still, I could probably see a middle ground taking place and that these kids can play as individuals unattached, but you're not counting a team score. You're not showing up on the team leaderboard. I think that could be maybe a middle ground so that these kids who are really good don't show up these college programs. But then, you know, I can see the other argument, and I know what you're going to say. Play better.
Play better. Real simple. Play better. And I'll ask you because you'll know better than I. Does this count as a loss to a college team? Yeah. Then no excuses. Because you could have sold me on the narrative of, oh, God, that's a loss we can't take. Play better. And if you're losing to teenagers, then your kid, you're like, I don't want to see this every week.
Yeah.
But I think a one-off, and I guarantee you the coaches didn't like it, were the coaches that finished behind him.
Yep. And speaking of play better, how about play faster?
Well, there you go. Love when you sent out that. And I don't know if we've ever gotten into this. Brentley owns this. I'm happy to be part of the ride. He'll give me the format. We call it a rundown in the business. Where are we going? I need to know why 15 strokes of slow pay penalties were handed out. And I hope it continues. I love college golf. If you're listening, you probably know that by now. The casual fan has a hard time watching it because there's just, it's too darn slow.
Yeah, this is like that, I think it's Big and Rich, the song Stroke It to the Left, Stroke It to the Right. You ever heard that one?
I've heard it. I couldn't tell you who in the world sings it.
But yeah, great song back in the day when I used to go line dancing with my friends. But yeah, I mean, this is one of those things. I don't know if we see this a lot, you know, maybe not a lot, but frequently at the NCAA championship, at the NCAA regionals, where they use the checkpoint system and you have the overall time par and you basically have to, you know, complete your round in a certain amount of time and meet these checkpoints. And if you miss more than one checkpoint, you're liable for a one-shot penalty. Well, we had a group in the first round, which included one of the National Junior Development Program players. And then in the final round, to the penultimate threesome with Christian Moss, Bowen Moss from Arizona State, and Mahanth Chiravuri from Pepperdine, they each got a one-shot penalty. But then for players that missed three of the four checkpoints, which one group did, they got three shots apiece. Keaton Vo from North Carolina, Connor Hamm from Arizona, and the third player's, I think it was like Jake Foley from Washington. It was a player from Washington. And I mean, long story short, these guys were significantly behind and missing their checkpoints. And one key fact, and I know a lot of coaches texted me and said, look, this always happens, you know, when you when you have, you know, certain rules officials and they just love to give penalties out and stuff. And it's like, no, look, I think, you know, one coach said it best. He said, no player or coach thinks that a slow play penalty is fair. They all think it's unfair. And another one said, when I asked, is this a case of overzealous rules officials or no? And he said, I would actually say that every other tournament and rule staff is underzealous. Like, this is exactly how it needs to be. So props for Jim Moriarty, who's been, you know, a key pillar for the game of college golf as a rules official. He's everywhere on the West Coast. He does USGA championships. He does NCAA championships. He's the best of the best. And he operates in black and white. You know, if you're over and you don't have a good excuse, then you're going to get penalized because you need to speed up because the game has gotten too slow at every level, including the pros. And it's a huge hot button issue. And the fact of the matter, these guys have to speed up. And so when you have players who are supposed to keep track of the team's time or their threesomes time, and then they show up in scoring and they're like, oh, I didn't know I had to do it. Or Christian Moss, who goes, well, I didn't have a phone. My coach takes my phone away. Well, speak up before the round. Say, I don't have a phone. I can't do it. I mean, there's so many things wrong with this. I would encourage everyone. There's a lot in this story, you know, that I could ramble about, but it just boils down to you need to be faster, and you also need to pay attention to the rules and pace of play policies so you don't get blindsided. So learning experience for everybody. Hats off to Jim Moriarty. He does a great job. And play faster.
Now, I'm on board. I'm on board. I hope it continues. It's not a vendetta. It's not. That's one thing, our passion for this game. Get it going, because you just reference it permeates at every level. Well, it starts here. Plain and simple. What else we got here for you? Folds of Honor, Bama, back-to-back, a six-stroke win over Notre Dame, FSU in eighth without Tyler Weaver, Jacob Modleski, who we referenced, Red Eye, got to Northern Michigan, solo fifth. Kudos to him. Completely understand Tyler Weaver not being in the lineup. But you're impressed by Alabama's William Jennings with the victory. Why so?
So former top 10 junior, he's a sophomore this year, only played in, not even two full events last year as a freshman for JC. Well, his very first round of college golf last spring, Watersound Invitational, he shoots 92 and then WDs. Plays just one other time, so-so, but, you know, it's really... I mean, we talk about college being a huge adjustment. It was a massive adjustment for William Jennings, but had a nice summer, made the quarters at North and South, made match play, lost in the first round, though, at the USAM, and now wins his first event of the fall. I think when sizing up Alabama coming into this season, I don't know if I expected anywhere close to this. So super, super impressed. And I know JC Well was sipping that milkshake last night with a huge smile on his face because – he knew what he had probably in Jonathan Grizz, and to a certain extent, someone like Connor Brown or even like a Nicholas Gross. But if you get this from William Jennings, who's shooting 92 less than a year ago, this is a huge positive if you're a supporter of Alabama.
Yeah, I hate that I wasn't able to make it, obviously, with the Walker Cup. Jacob didn't offer me a ride on his flight to get there.
We should have coordinated that. Do you think his dad flew him in the fighter jet?
He had a nice trip. I'm almost certain of that. But I know our crew did a great job, and I'm excited to get back to the Stevens Cup Shore Acres next week for that coverage. Some other results, visit Knoxville Collegiate, Tennessee, 7-shot win over Ole Miss, LSU another 6-back. The Auburn transfer, Reed Lauder, as an individual, sharing medalist honors for the Vols. Texas A&M, a 7-stroke victory over South Carolina at the Gopher Invitational. Duke getting the job done at home. Rod Meyer's Invitational, 9-shot victory over North Carolina Wilmington, that is. Wake Forest, big over Wofford at the Bryant National Collegiate. And the Palouse Collegiate, the Cougars of Washington State, a 6-stroke victory over Santa Clara. Let's pivot real quickly. We'll keep with the Folds of Honor as we go to the women before we get to the Annika. Texas A&M, a three-stroke win over Baylor. They were six back. They rallied. Kentucky, North Carolina, Michigan State rounding out the top five. It's early, but the Aggies 2-for-2. How good are they? I think I referenced it when I joined Damon Hack Monday on Golf Central. That was that team maybe out of the top five or six in a preseason ranking that you're bullish on. I doubled down on that statement. They were down last year after making match play a couple of straight years. They're good, and they're making an early statement out of the gates.
Yeah, anytime you have a young team, I know Garrett Chadwell was expecting some growing pains, and I'm sure if you would have asked him a few weeks ago, look, you're going to go 2-for-2, and Scarlett Schremmer, you know, your top-ranked recruit coming in as part of a really great and deep class, wasn't going to make the lineup for that second event, he probably would have thought that, you know, maybe, you know, you were crazy. But again, this is a really, really deep team. Cata Fernandez Garcia. I can't even, there's too many names, but
Oyo.
Cata, Vanessa Borovillos, that's a really good 1-2 punch. And then people, I think, pay a lot of attention to Scarlett Schremmer. Natalie Yen is just as good. She could potentially be a freshman of the year type. And it'll be interesting to see how this team continues to withstand, you know, that inexperience, you know, and those growing pains. But I expect them to be back in position where we've seen them in years past.
We're minutes away from Brentley's interview with Chloe Kovaleski, who shared co-medalist honors with Ella Galitsky at the Annika Intercollegiate Wake Forest as the team holds off Oregon by 2. The Ducks made a run, 16 under that final day, a little short in the end. But, I mean, the Annika for, you know, what, about a decade or so, this event, it's kind of, once they've made that move to Minnesota, it's a biggie. You know, you can credit to the Demon Deacons. We know Oregon's going to be going to be a really good team. Ella Galitsky's a star. We keep talking Kiara Romero, and understandably so, top-ranked amateur in the world. In, 8 months as a college golfer, Galitsky is phenomenal. I wanted more from Duke. Yeah, I think I just thought Rianne Malixi was going to slide right in, and they played okay. You know, the transition is never easy, so I don't want to go too crazy, but I was like, God, that's the team. I'm hoping we're going to see what I believe we will from Rianne and others. But, hey, you know what? Credit to the Demon Deacons to do what they did out of the gate. They really haven't missed too much of a beat since winning the national championship, and I'm always intrigued that 2 or 3 years after, what are you doing? How are you using that as a springboard? And I think they've done it well.
Yeah, to add Morgan Ketchum as a transfer, Casey Weidenfeld, they got 2 transfers in the lineup. And their best player, arguably, or one of their, Macy Pate, tying for 36th. This is huge. But, you know, kind of going to Duke, you know, I'm surprised about that. I mean, T30 from Rianne Malixi, who, by all accounts, both of us agree that she has player of the year potential. Not a great start. Same with Arizona State at 10th. But I'll tell you what, a 9th place finish or a 10th place finish in this field isn't really reason to press that panic button. You know, totally respectable, you know, especially for the first event of the year. And I do not expect Duke to play like this all season. And the same with the Sun Devils. And the Sun Devils will get some reinforcement. You know, they'll get Pimpissa Rubrong starting in January. So, you know, I think that's when we'll start to see Missy's squad really start to pick it up. But yeah, this is a great event. I'd love to see it kind of move around in terms of golf courses. I don't necessarily feel like this golf course, at least off the tee, is as challenging as it needs to be. So would love to see it move around because, you know, obviously one of the best fields. The Annika Foundation does so much, and I know why they have it there. I'd love to see it move around.
Other results, Cougar Classic, Ole Miss by 2 over Tennessee, Florida, UCF, Clemson rounding out the top 5, LSU 6th, Auburn 9th, no Rocio Tejedo for the Tigers, the LSU Tigers, no Katie Cranston in those lineups. no reason to hit the panic button. Auburn, though, as a whole, didn't love how they finished up last year. You would think the possibility, the last go-around for Anna Davis, that is just conjecture, going off of earlier discussions of how long they anticipated her to be around. So let's take a step back, let it breathe, see how Auburn and LSU plays the rest of this fall campaign. And then the Wolverine Invitational, Kent State, six-shot win over Virginia. So that's the Walker Cup laydown, early men's and women's results, and now a chance for Brentley, who caught up with Chloe Kovaleski, to get a sense of how things are going for her at Wake Forest.
All right. Well, fresh off the plane from Minnesota, winner of the Annika Intercollegiate, Wake Forest sophomore Chloe Kovaleski. Chloe, thanks for jumping on at such short notice, but let's jump right into it. Huge win, your second technically of college golf, but the first was just an 18-hole weather-shortened event. What was the significance of getting your first kind of statement victory at a tournament like the Annika Intercollegiate?
Yeah, honestly, coming into this week, I was really confident. I'd been playing really well. And honestly, was just really excited to get back out and into the swing of things of playing again, traveling with the team, and super excited to do all of that. So to come out with a win is really a great feeling. I've been working really hard and just been trying to tighten up on all aspects of my game. And so to see some actual results is really, really nice.
What's it like playing a team event, but an individual competition against someone like Kiara Romero, Ella Galitsky, who both absolutely caught fire on that final day? What was it like going toe to toe with players of that caliber?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think that when you play at this level, it's very important to just keep your mindset kind of how you always have, or improve on it if you need to, which is kind of what I've been trying to do. And Ella and Kiara, they're both really great players. And honestly, I like to think that I'm just as good as them, and I can work hard. And as I've been working hard, I see improvement, and I know that I can compete with them. And so that's definitely something that has been a key for me. I think that over the summer, I was really trying to figure out, what's the quickest way to get some strokes off my scores in tournaments. And I think that a big thing for me was just confidence, like having confidence in the shot that I'm hitting, or knowing that my yardage is good, or trying to have a little more stability with the putter, just knowing like, hey, even if you miss the putt, know you hit a good putt. And so that's something I've been really working on. And so that's really helped me just try to stay steady with, we're going to these incredible events. I think our whole team's very grateful. We get to play a really nice schedule against some really great teams. And so with that, you're going to play against the best players in the world. And to know that you can compete with them is a very, it's a high stature, but it's very, very important.
Mm-hmm. And last spring, you come in early, you get off, you hit the ground running. I mean, you didn't finish worse than 19th until the NCAA championship, where you tied for 119th. What about that event and the way you played, kind of how you felt about your game that week in San Diego? What about that prompted you to want to go into the summer and really work on your game?
Yeah, if I'm being honest, Nationals wasn't the greatest. It was obviously sad for the whole team. I think all of us were disappointed and upset with the finish, but we had a good season overall. And so you have to take the positives away and say, hey, what have we improved on? How can we continue to improve? And La Costa is a very hard golf course, and you have to play, I feel like you have to play it a certain way. I'm not sure exactly how that is yet, but I think honestly I got pretty tired at the end of the year. I can come out and say that I got tired. I got exams and like all the things that kind of catch up to you as a freshman, and so, or any college player. And so it definitely, I think I left Nationals with the sight of, hey, I know what I need to work on. I know what I really struggled with this week. I know that I need to take some time off. I need to rest, and I need to get my body in a little better shape just to be able to handle the travel. I mean, obviously the travel is really hard. And so I think I just took that in over the summer, and I I only play two events over the summer other than like qualifiers and so for like the AM. And so I played my first event in the summer and I ended up missing the cut on the number. And I was a little bit, you know, sad about that because I knew I left a lot out there. And so I lost in a playoff for like one of the last spots at the North South and said, okay, you know what, let's just keep working hard. And went to the U.S. Junior and was pretty grateful to have Coach Ryan on the bag. So that was really fun. And if I'm being completely honest, I left the Junior knowing that I was trending in a really good place. And I walked out of the round that I lost and I just said, I know it's coming. And I know that if I keep working hard and I keep tightening these aspects, like it's going to be really good. And so coming into this week, I was confident and definitely happy with the outcome.
For someone who hit to as far as you do, how beneficial has it been to get to college where a lot of players, you know, you get better from inside 100 yards, you get better on the greens because you're just practicing a different way. Is there some sort of drill or practice habit that you've developed since you've gotten to college that has helped you with the wedges, the short game, the putting?
Oh, yeah. Specifically, I think putting. Actually, I changed my wedges recently and I changed the shafts and kind of the swing weight. And that has made a very big difference. Just being able to feel the club face and the squareness of the club face. I think
I went heavier,
yeah. A good bit heavier actually. And so that was a really big difference in my wedge game other than like practicing with repetition and stuff. I think something that we're able to do on our facility is go out into the middle of like kind of the middle of the range or on different tee boxes and hit shots to like our back greens. And so I did that a lot and that seemed to help a lot. It's definitely good for like honing in distances and just hitting like a stock yardage, like, hey, what can I try and land on the pin and just see stock yardages. As for putting, which is where the very technical stuff comes in, Coach Ryan and I, we've been really working on developing a good putting routine because I think a lot of times, as I'm sure every player is like, if you're not confident with a line on, especially on the green, like it's hard to hit a good putt. And it's something that I struggled with. And so really just developing, hey, what do I do at the beginning of my practice session? Do I start line drills, speed control? Let's do some, you know, like putting drill type situation of like inside of 10 feet, inside of 6 feet. Okay, let's do more speed control and then go out and then you just kind of do little drills like that. And I know I talked to him a little bit before we left to start working on some chipping drills, just like landing it on a coin and stuff like that. And so, honestly, coming to college, it's hard. You know, you go from being able to practice all the time. I mean, I was homeschooled in high school, so I went from being able to practice just like a ton of time to just, hey, you have this little tiny window and you need to get everything done because you have homework to do or like, hey, you know, you have to manage just simple things. So I definitely, time management was something that I really had to work on in terms of like, how can I get the most efficient practice in a little like smaller amount of time?
Mm-hmm. You talked a little bit about kind of the endurance aspect of the college golf season. I'm curious. I know some programs their coaches work out, but do Coach Kim and Coach Ryan are they in the gym? Are they running with you?
Oh, they are. They definitely okay, are. Good. It's really fun to have them in there with us, and they're always motivating us, and we're always motivating them. We're like, let's go, Coach, come on. So it's really fun having them in there. But yeah, I think it's great because you know what. It shows that they're dedicated as much as we are. And you know what, they're putting in the same time and effort knowing that, hey, we're all going to be on the golf course for the same amount of time, if not longer for them when they're going out with the first player and not ending up off until the fifth is done. So.
Yeah, they bounce, as do all coaches, you bounce around quite a bit, you know, going from par three tee boxes to back to the player who just bogeyed three straight. But this team needed you last spring to come a semester early. And I think it's more prevalent on the women's side. And obviously, I think it speaks to, you know, kind of the student, you know, that you are too, that you were able to academically, you know, become eligible to come early. But what was the conversation like? When did you first think that, you know, enrolling early and contributing last spring was a possibility? And how difficult or how much of a challenge was it to get yourself ready for that?
Yeah, I think it was in July, around July, when Coach originally asked me. And my immediate answer was, yes, I'll do everything I can to try and get there. Obviously, you have to, like, take a step back and be like, okay, wait, let me, like, look at my decisions and see what, you know, the outcomes of everything. But I just told her I would do everything I can to try and get school done. And if they ended up finding someone else and didn't really need me, maybe I could come in and just, like, practice with the team, get ahead in school. As we got closer, like, we kind of figured out, like, okay, they wanted me to come in so that I could help the team. So, yeah, I had to do, even though I was virtual schooled, I had to do so much school. I was doing so many hours of school a day, at least over this. I did school all summer or the rest of the summer. I signed up for class, was like, okay, I'm just going to take this now. And I did a ton of classes. I did like 6-7 hours a day of practice. I literally was going straight from practice to school, and just that was my life for a couple months. But then I actually ended up graduating a good bit earlier than I expected, and I ended up having a good amount of a break before I came in, which was really nice to spend with my parents and everything, since I know that was a big change for them too, because they went from, you know, me leaving now, and I'm an only child, and so me leaving what would have been this past month to 7-8 months ago. So
And what many people don't realize is, you know, you're trying to get ready to enroll early academically, but you're also trying to get physically healthy. Talk a little bit about the knee injuries and how much that set you back. And, you know, now when you look back on that, how gratifying is it to be where you are now?
Yeah, I mean, I had my first knee surgery in 2021, and it was my right knee. And that was definitely not something I expected to really have. It just kind of happened. And so, 2022, not 2021, had it in 2022. And ended up recovering really quickly. And by recovering, I mean, I was told I could play golf pretty quickly and just kind of was like, okay, great, let's go play. And I did it all. And honestly, I don't know if I could say maybe I could have done more in the like rehab sense to try and make sure things weren't issues weren't caused quicker, but I'm not sure if I had exactly the correct guidance. It's a lot easier when you're in college and you have the guidance of like physical therapists and all the people and the resourcing. So unfortunately, I just don't think I had that completely. And so 2 years later, my knee had never really fully recovered. Honestly, I think I started to play better, but it was bothering me a ton still. And I just felt like I'd play a longer event and I would just be like done by the end of it. I was like, oh my gosh, my knee hurts so bad. I don't really know what to do. And it wasn't even like the swinging aspect. It was simply just walking. And so got in a couple another MRIs done and ended up needing, they were like, you should probably get another one. And honestly, it was, or have another knee surgery, same exact thing. And so very complicated looking back on it now, because like, as I've talked to everyone here at Wake Forest, like they've been extremely helpful. I've been really working hard on trying to get my knee in good shape, just making my body all well-rounded, just so that, you know, I have, I guess you can call it like cushions on like my quads and thighs and everything, just so that they're not lacking to compensate for my knee. So yeah, it was definitely a setback, but honestly, I think as many people have, like injuries are a way for you to learn more about yourself mentally and to learn how strong you are physically and mentally. And now all that didn't happen, but it's unfortunate that it did. I don't think it was something I really could have avoided. It was going to happen over time. I ended up, the first time I actually fell down a flight of stairs, which is what kind of caused it, but yeah,
that might do it.
Yeah, that was the first time, but the actual thing itself was something that I was born with, like in my knee. So it wasn't like it was, hey, I fell down the stairs and I, you know, tore something. It was, hey, you had this and it was going to happen probably anyway. You just did it quicker. So yeah, it's definitely been a challenge, but I think that overall I'm a lot stronger for it. And so I'm grateful to have the resources here that can help me now. So all of that together is really nice.
Do you feel like in a way, you have more kind of untapped potential just because like you've had to battle injuries, like you've gotten to college early, you've gotten the growing pains out of the way. How much do you feel like you know, this season could be a breakout for you.
Yeah, honestly, I think that getting healthy and I'm still battling some other things I'm trying to manage. And so I think that getting healthy and when I can play golf when I'm fully healthy, I'm really excited to see what I can bring. I think the last two events I've played in, so the Annika and the US Girls Junior, I've really learned so much about my game, whether it's how good I am at flighting it in the wind or just being able to control certain shots better. I think just watching my practice really pay off and knowing that I'm confident in it is definitely a really big thing that's helped. And so I'm really excited for the season. I'm really super, super hyped up for everything to do with not only me, but as a team. I think our team is great this year. Our chemistry is amazing, honestly. We have two freshmen and two transfers, and obviously our senior Anne and Macy. Not Macy's not senior, but yeah. So all of us is just, we all get along really well, and we all are in Sarah. And by the way, I'm rooming with Sarah. We're living together. So that's super fun. And so, just all of us together is like, we have a blast. And, you know, this past week was super fun traveling. And so I think I'm so excited for the season and with the team coaches and just see what I can do individually as well to help.
There's obviously a lot of expectations team-wise, but people probably would be surprised to hear that you've never played in an Augusta National Women's Amateur, right?
And, that's correct.
And you've never played in a U.S. Women's Amateur, right?
Also correct.
How much or how high on the goals list are those, and do you have any other individual goals that you're trying to accomplish this season?
Yeah, the Augusta National Women's Amateur is definitely pretty high up there. Definitely something I've probably talked about more than I probably should. I think that I've always been really close on, like, in terms of WAGR, how it's fluctuated over the past couple of years. I've always been pretty close on the list and knowing, like, hey, there's a chance, but it's not likely. But if you would have, you know, had a couple higher finish or better finishes, it definitely would have been in. Or so, that one's been up there for a while. It's definitely been close to been like, hey, I really want this. So that was definitely something coming into the fall. I just said, hey, you know what, whatever happens, happens, but let's just go out there. And I actually took a very different approach going into the Annika this past week, not a different approach, but I kind of just wanted to say, hey, let's just go out and play. Let's work on everything we've worked on and see what the outcome can be. Let's not worry about, you know, obviously I want our team to play well, and I wanted to play well to help my team win and do everything. But I kind of just said, hey, let's just take a step back and let's really evaluate this shot by shot. Let's not rush it. And so I did that. And so obviously the goal in mind is to end up there or get the invitation in January. So hopefully that is a outcome. And then as for the U.S. Women's Amateur, yeah, I wouldn't say my track record with qualifiers has been quite interesting over the past, I don't know how many years. I mean, I've qualified for a U.S. Women's Open when I was 14 before I had even qualified for a junior or an am. I don't know how that happens. And so, that's interesting too. It's definitely an interesting fact that when you're just talking to even golfers, when you say that to them, they're like, wait, why aren't you playing an am? And I was like, hey, I don't make that decision, you know? And so, I've had a lot of people, especially in the spring since I came early and was playing, I had so many people ask me, they're like, oh, well, I'll see you in a couple weeks at Anwan. I was like, no, like, you're not playing? I was like, I didn't get in. But it's definitely hoping for that one coming up.
Well, now that CeCe has graduated, I think Coach Potter, he's looking for a bag. So, maybe
we've talked.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Made some hopeful plans.
So I like to do a little bit of research ahead of time, and, you know, I reached out to both coaches and got a lot of, you know, potential topics to discuss, and one that came up was, like, is there a unique way that you organize and clean your golf clubs?
He did put that in there. I knew it.
So it's obviously pretty unique.
No. It's that the golf club organization definitely could be a little bit better.
Okay.
They just go in the bag and that works. Unfortunately, I don't really know why, especially because I don't even have like oversized grips or anything. So my golf clubs just don't like going in the bag. They just like get stuck. And so then I'm just like, okay, well, I'll just put it somewhere else. And so then my putter ends up where my driver is. My driver ends up where my sand wedges, or actually, no, I would never put my woods where my wedges are. I won't do that. But my irons will end up top and down below. And then there. Coach Kim's just like, I do that too. And then Coach Ryan will come over and he's like, oh my gosh, you need to fix this. And then very gratefully, as I'm working on getting better at cleaning my golf clubs, especially because I've been working on my spin, I need to do a little better of that, I will admit. But I'm very grateful for Coach Ryan coming over before every round and just doing a nice little scrub on the clubs. We had a funny moment this past week. Right before the second round, he like took my wedges out and he just like walked away with them. And I just looked at him, I was like, I need those. And then he put them back in. And then I started birdie, eagle, birdie. And so two of them were with those. And he was like, it's because I cleaned the wedges. I was like, of course. So yeah, I could probably. It's definitely interesting. I think all my teammates are like, Chloe, why is your putter over here? Why is this over here? And I'm like, it just happened. I'm sorry.
So I'm sure you can imagine that idea came from Coach Ryan.
Yes.
Coach Kim, though, had an interesting question. I guess you're not a dog person, but you're a huge cat person.
I love dogs too. That's not true.
But cats are number one. And why is that? Because that's it's a controversial topic, I think, for lots of people.
I actually have two dogs. So I have two dogs and I love them. Their names are Hashtag and Duncan. Very interesting names, I know. And the Duncan is spelled like Dunkin' Donuts, not the name Duncan.
After Dunkin' Donuts.
Yeah.
Okay. So we'll write that down. We'll send that. We'll try to get you some NIL.
Hashtag Duncan. See? Get it?
Yeah.
Hashtag
that's
Duncan.
Awesome.
Yeah. But anyway, so I love my dogs. And I had a childhood dog who my head cover on my driver is a chocolate lab because he was actually the reason I started playing golf. We had a synthetic green in our yard, so he retrieved golf balls naturally. So dogs are very close to my heart, so don't let anyone think I don't like dogs. I love dogs. And but I do have a cat. His name is Peanut, and he is – every time I'm on the phone with my parents, I'm like, can you send me a photo of Peanut, please? And actually, at the junior, I ordered these ball marks. I have a ball mark that I used actually this past week. It's called Cowboy Cat, and it's like a cat with a cowboy hat on it. I think it's hilarious. No one said anything about it, but I just, every time I look at it, I laugh. And I think it's a good way to just keep me like, hey, like, let's not be too really crazy about this. Like, let's just stay in the moment, but like kind of keep you down to earth. And so, yeah, I love cats. And actually my parents recently got a house in Pinehurst like last year, and they moved there and there was an outdoor cat that just kind of hung out there named Luca, and then another one showed up named Mel, and so now we have two outdoor cats that come to our house, and I have my cat inside, so now we have,
you have a lot of cats. Wait, so the outdoor cats, they already had names, or you named them?
Yeah, no, originally I was going to name them something else, but then I realized that technically a couple houses down owned the two cats.
The cats didn't come and introduce themselves.
They just came and introduced themselves, and one of them likes to stay in my garage now. Just comes in and they're like outside cats, and everyone feeds them, but I think they like coming to my house the best.
Well, it sounds like the ball marker is a bit of a good luck charm.
I think so. I it's definitely staying on the hat, and I unfortunately think my team knows this. I have a tendency to lose some things sometimes. It just kind of happens.
Might get lost.
Yeah. So I've been really, I'm like, you can't lose this one. You got to keep this one. You're not losing it, because you know what? This is going well. Just don't do that.
Well, for your sake and for the Demon Deacon's sake, we hope you hold on to that ball marker all season. Chloe, thanks so much for the time. Congrats again on the win, and good luck to you and Cowboy Cat, in your next event, and maybe you can, go 2 for 2 in college golf with a new ball marker.
Thank you. Have a great day. Thank you.
Well, that was Chloe Kovaleski joining us. And for Steve Burkowski and Brentley Romine, this was another week of College Golf Talk. Thanks so much for the support, and we will see you next week.